Please turn to Genesis chapter 17. Genesis 17, we'll read verse 5. No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham. God also said to Abraham, as for Sarah, your wife, you shall no longer be called Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. Now turn to 1 Samuel 18, verse 4. Get your fingers ready because we're turning to a lot of verses here. 1 Samuel 18, verse 4, it says, Jonathan took off his robe that he was wearing, and he gave it to David, along with his tunic, and even his sword and bow, and his belt. Let's go back to Genesis 15, and we'll read verses 9 and 10. Genesis 15, verse 9, it says, so the Lord said to him, bring me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. And Abram brought all of these to him. He cut them in two and arranged the halves opposite of each other. And then finally, let's turn to John 20, verse 25. John 20, verse 25, it says, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my fingers where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it. Now, you're probably wondering, why am I having you turn to all these random verses? Well, by understanding Eastern culture, they all have an obvious connection. A few years ago, my wife and I bought a new used car. And after we verbally agreed to buy it, we were brought into this little tiny room where this man had this stack of papers. And one by one, he started pulling them out. He would quickly explain what the document was, and then he'd show us where to sign. Well, this one states that you will pay all the money agreed. He handed it to us and we signed it. Well, this one states that you will have the car serviced here. And this one protects if anything major goes wrong, because in Massachusetts, there is a lemon law. And then he'd have a sign it. Well, this one states that you will not bring the car back in 2 weeks because you don't like the color. And I mean, seriously, I laughed. Are you serious? And he assured me that it was real and that people had done just that. So I had to sign it. Well, we are in Western culture. We understand what a contract is. Both of us in a contract are trying to protect ourselves from the other party not living up to what that contract is. Well, when we read the Bible, And we look at things like the Old and New Covenant, I mean, we assume that it's sort of a contract. But the Bible was not written in Western culture. It was written in Eastern culture. When we look at the Bible as a contract between us and God, I mean, we say, oh, okay, well, if I do something wrong and sin, I broke that contract and God is going to be mad at me. Well, that might be what in Western culture a contract is, but it is not what a covenant is. In ancient times, the blood covenant was common among people of the Middle East. And in fact, covenants were quite prevalent in many ancient cultures. It was a way of establishing a binding agreement between people or between tribes. And what we call the Old and New Testament could easily be called, and it is, the Old and New Covenants. Well, the typical blood covenant contained nine elements. And these nine elements don't have to go in the same order that, I'm going to give them, but I'm going to go through quickly what these nine elements were. The first one is that the two people who were going into this covenant would exchange coats or robes. The coat or robe represented the person himself. So when he offered it to another person, his robe, he really was offering himself, even his very life itself, he was offering to the other person. So in this exchange, they were both saying, in a sense, all that I am giving to you. With this agreement, if I came over to your house and we were in covenant with each other and I said, I need $100, you could not say no. I mean, you couldn't say, oh, you know, I don't get paid till next week and I got a flat tire. I only have $100 left. I was going to buy my tire. You would have to give that $100 to me. That's what a covenant is. So we're starting to see here that a covenant is a little bit more than just a simple contract. The second thing they would do is that they would take off their belt and offer it to the other person. The belt was used to hold a sword or a knife or other fighting instruments. And in this way, what they were saying to the other person is that you were offering him your protection. If someone attacks you, well, then they have to deal with the other person in the covenant. Your battles are my battles. You know, the troubles that you go through are mine. That's what giving the belt represented. So think of in ancient times, there might be a tribe that was really good at farming and they needed protection, and maybe a tribe next to them was good warriors. So they would go in covenant with each other. They would protect the farmers and the farmers would feed the warriors. That's how the covenant, that's why they went in covenant tribes with each other. Well, the third thing is that they would cut the covenant. And usually they don't say, I'm going to have a covenant with you. They say, I'm going to cut the covenant with you. And in this part, they would take an animal and they would cut it down to the middle, and then they'd lay the two halves on the ground opposite of each other. Well, then the two parties would have to pass between the two halves of the animals. And what they were saying is, may God do so to me and more if I break this covenant. This is a blood covenant, and it cannot be broken. And then they would walk in sort of a figure eight. And if you take a figure eight and you turn it sideways, that's like an infinity sign. It was forever until death. And many covenants were beyond death. They would go for generations with the agreement between two peoples or two tribes. Well, then what they would do is right after that is they raise their right arm and they would cut their palms with their hand, and they clasp each other's hand and they would mingle their blood. I mean, this is saying that we are becoming one with each other. To intermingle blood is to intermingle really the very life of both people. Then what they do, another one, the fifth element, is that they would exchange names. So each one in the covenant would take part of the name of the other person and incorporate it into their own name. The sixth thing they would do is that they would make a scar or some identifying mark. And this scar was an outward evidence that they were in covenant with others, and it could be seen and known that they were in covenant with others. So if someone wanted to fight you, you know, seeing your scar, they would know that whoever that person is in covenant with, I'm also going to have to fight them. I mean, let's say we're at a church picnic and Brianna looks over at me and says, you know, Kurt, honey, I don't really like the way Mr. Sparry wears his hair. Will you go over and punch him? And he goes, yes, dear. And he walks over to punch me and he sees this giant scar on my forearm. And then he goes, oh. And he starts asking, who's he in covenant with? Well, he's in covenant with Moose, that big guy who sits in the back, who's 6'5" in the back of the church. So then he goes back to Bernie and says, hey, why don't we just let it go this time? Our church picnics sometimes can get a little rough. Another thing was, in a covenant, they would each give the terms of the covenant. So there would be a list of blessings for keeping the covenant, and there'd be a list of curses if you broke the covenant. Well, both parties would have to stand before a witness, and they'd list all their assets and their liabilities. Because what was happening is each one had to take on the strengths and the weaknesses of the other person that they were going in covenant with. So really what you're saying is, everything that I have is yours, and everything that you have is mine. If something happens to you and your covenant partner, let's say you're in covenant with somebody and they die and they have a wife and children, well, as part of that covenant, you would have to make sure their wife and children were taken care of for the rest of their life. So an eighth thing, element of a covenant, is that they would eat a memorial meal. And in just about every ancient culture, that meal was bread and wine. And then finally, there would be a memorial. The two of them would make some kind of memorial of the covenant, and they'd sprinkle it with the blood of the animal that was killed for the covenant offering. And it could be something as simple as rocks, it could be a building, it could be a tower. So they would make a memorial for the covenant. Well, we can see that a covenant is not a simple contract. It is something much, much more. To enter into a covenant, you really have to be all in. Well, there's lots of covenants listed in the Bible, but there's not a lot of great detail about the elements of the covenant, because everyone in Eastern culture is familiar with the process and procedure of what a covenant is. And the writers of the Bible just assumed we would all know what a covenant is and kind of how it works. But again, we're in Western culture, and the Bible was written in Eastern culture. Well, in our Bible, we have the Old and New Testaments, or the Old and New Covenant. So let's look first quickly at the Old Covenant that was made with Abram. Please turn to Genesis chapter 12, and we'll read verses 1 through 3. In Genesis chapter 12, verse 1, it said, "And the Lord had said to Abram, 'Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the people on the earth will be blessed through you.'" Well, this blessing and cursing, what's happening is God approached Abram, and he's starting to talk covenant talk with him. Let's go down to verse 10. What verse 10 shows us is that there was a famine, and what Abram wanted to do is he wanted to go with his wife and live in Egypt where there was food so that he could eat. But because his wife was so beautiful, he thought, you know, these Egyptians, they're going to kill me for my wife. So he told them that she was his sister. And what you're seeing here is Abram really doesn't know who God is yet at this point in his life. He does not have a lot of confidence in this sort of covenant talk or what's starting to happen here, because he doesn't really know God yet. So the Pharaoh treated Abraham very well for the sake of his sister, who was really his wife. And he took her into the palace to sleep with her. Well, verse 16, we see that Abraham, because of his sister, his wife, was given a lot of sheep and cattle and men and maid servants. I mean, he was given by the Pharaoh a lot of wealth. But in verse 17, the Lord inflicted serious disease on Pharaoh and his household. And what's happening here is God is holding the covenant with Abram. He's starting to develop this covenant relationship. Well, the Pharaoh approaches Abram and says, "What are you doing to me? Why didn't you tell me she was your wife?" And you would think at this point he would just kill him, right? Like, and be done with it. But verse 20 says, he sent Abram and his wife away and all the gifts that were given to him. And we see God is starting to intervene. God is starting to protect Abram here because he's in starting to develop to be in covenant with him. In Genesis 13, verse 2, it shows that Abram becomes very wealthy. And God is saying, all that I have, I give to you. Look how God continues to watch over Abram and his life and protect him. In Genesis 14, verse 11, four kings and their armies came and they raided a camp that Lot, who was Abram's nephew, was in, and they took the people hostage. Well, in verse 14, Abram had 318 men, and he said, I have to go after them. They're my family. But he's going against four kings with their army. Well, verse 15, God gives Abram victory. And in Genesis 14, verse 18, we see that they had a covenant meal. Again, we're seeing these elements of the covenant as God is starting to build the relationship with Abram. Well, continuing in Genesis 15, in verse 1, it says, Genesis 15, verse 1, we start to see that this blood covenant is going to be cut. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, do not fear, Abram. I am your shield to you. Your reward shall be very great. I mean, we see here in a sense that God is offering his robe and his belt to Abram. He's offering to be his shield and his rewards. He cuts the covenant in chapter 15, verse 9. So he said to him, bring me a three-year-old heifer and a three-year-old male goat and a three-year-old ram and a turtle dove and a young pigeon. And then he brought all these things to him and he cut them in two and he laid each half opposite of each other. Verse 12. Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and behold, terror and great darkness fell on him. Verse 17, and it came about when the sun had set that it was very dark, and behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a flaming torch which passed between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram. Well, Abram fell into a deep sleep because if he saw God who was making this covenant with him, he would die, right? People can't see God and live. And then afterwards, usually what they would do is they would cut each other and mix blood. And God did not mix blood with Abram at this time because God did not have blood. But he didn't have blood yet. In Genesis 17, verse 4 and 5, we see another element of the covenant, and that was exchanging the names. Genesis 17, verse 4, and as for me, behold, my covenant is with you, and you shall be the father of a multitude of nations. God is making a covenant here with Abram. No longer shall you be called Abram, but you should be called Abraham. For I will make you the father of a multitude of many nations. And then again, Sarai, he changes her name to Sarah. Well, in Hebrew, God is called Yahweh or Jehovah. And they don't have vowels. So it's YHWH, and it's pronounced like so really, we see that what's happening here is he's combining God's name with Abraham and Sarah, he's taking sort of the sounds, or he's taking part of his name and he's given it to them. And from that time on, God was known as the God of Abraham. So here, in a sense, they exchanged part of their names with each other. Well, next, we see the making of a scar, or a symbol of the covenant, in Genesis 17, verse 10. In Genesis 17, verse 10, it says, "This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised, and you shall be circumcised in the flesh of the foreskin, and it shall be a sign of covenant between me and you. And every male among you who is 8 days old shall be circumcised throughout your generations. A servant who is born in his house or is bought with money from a foreigner who is not of your descendants." So the scar of circumstance, of circumcision here, sort of bears witness to this covenant between God and Abram and his Abraham and his descendants. So turn to Genesis 22, verse 2. Well, we're all familiar with the story how Abraham did not have a son, and how Sarah tried to take things in her own hands and sort of resolve this problem, and she did it without God. And what a mess that made in their lives. You know, and that was, you know, he gave Hagar, he gave Abram her servant. And then this big mess happens, and there's jealousy, and like, right, she was trying to handle things herself without God. But in Genesis 22, we see here that God, what happens in the story is finally, when Sarah's very, very old, she becomes pregnant, and then they have their son, Isaac. Well, God is going to test Abraham, because he wants to see if Abraham is all in the covenant between the two. And in Genesis 22, verse 2, it says, "Then God said, take your son, your only son, Isaac," which, if you know the story, I mean, it was really, really hard and long for him finally to have his own son. And God says, "Take your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on the mountains that I will tell you about." So what's happening here is God is having Abraham travel 3 or 4 days to a very specific region, to a very specific mountain, to a very specific spot that he tells Abraham, "I will tell you about." Verse 12, Genesis 22, is where Abraham is about to kill Isaac. He lifts the knife after he binds him. He's actually going to kill his only son. But God stops him, because God realizes at this point that Abraham is all in. I mean, it was probably the best thing that Abraham had, and he was willing to sacrifice it because God asked him to do it. Abraham was all in. Well, when God first made the covenant with Abraham, he was not all in. He did not know who God was. He also was not all in when he and Sarah created the mess of having a son with Hagar. I mean, it took a lifetime for him to learn who God was and what it meant to be in covenant with God. Well, after he found and sacrificed the ram, look at verse 14 of Genesis 22. "So Abraham called the place, 'The Lord will provide.' And to this day it is said, 'On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided.'" Well, do you know what will be provided? Do you know what God explained to Abraham when he brought him to this very specific place and said, I will tell you about it? Turn to Galatians chapter 3. This is really amazing. In Galatians chapter 3, verse 8. It says, the scripture foresaw that God would justify the Gentiles by faith and announce the gospel in advance to Abraham. All nations will be blessed through you, and those who have faith are blessed among Abraham, the man of faith. God announced the gospel in advance to Abraham. God explained to Abraham what was going to happen on that very spot where he was going to sacrifice Isaac. And he explained to Isaac, to Abraham, what he was going to do to save all people. The place where he had Abraham travel to see if he was all in by sacrificing his only son, is the very place where God, in the future, would show us that he is all in by sacrificing his only son, that we might have eternal life. Turn back to Genesis 22. Genesis 22, verse 17. It says, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sands on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. You know, sand sort of represents physical descendants, and stars represent spiritual descendants. Well, do you know who the spiritual descendants of Abraham are? Well, look around. Look in this room. We are in covenant with God. That is God saying to us, all that I am, I give to you. Abraham was tested when God told him to sacrifice his only son, Isaac, on a small mountain called Moriah near the town of Salem. Abraham passed that test. Well, 2,000 years ago, the other party of the covenant was to sacrifice his only son. And the names have been changed. Salem was called Jerusalem, and Moriah had been changed to Calvary, but the place was exactly the same. The new covenant took place in the same area of the world, and it contained some of the same players. I mean, God was there, of course, and Jesus, who's now physical, incarnate, was the descendant of Abraham. But this time, Jesus not only represented Abraham's descendant, but he was also the offering. He was the lamb that was slain at that time. This time, it was God's only son that was sacrificed, not Abraham's. Turn to Jeremiah 31. Jeremiah 31, and we'll read verses 31 through 33. The time is coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. It will not be like the covenant I made with the forefathers when I took them by the hand to lead them out of Egypt, because they broke my covenant. Though I was a husband to them, declared the Lord, this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after that time, declares the Lord. I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts. I will be their God, and they will be my people. It's funny how this old covenant all along was pointing to the new covenant. We now are in covenant with Jesus Christ. We are in the new covenant. I mean, let's see some of the elements that I explained of a covenant. The exchange of coats or robes. Well, we come to this covenant clothed in sin and unrighteousness. He comes to this covenant in holiness and righteousness. And we put on Jesus Christ's righteousness. Isaiah 61, verse 10. Says, I delight greatly in the Lord. My soul rejoices in my God, for he has clothed me with the garments of salvation and arrayed me in the robe of righteousness. In 2 Corinthians 5, verse 21, it states that our sins are upon him, Jesus Christ, and we take his holiness for us. I mean, what an exchange, right? We really made out in this deal. We give him our sins. He gives us his holiness. He clothes us in that. What about the belt, right? Well, God protects us and he provides for us. Luke 10, verse 19 states that he gives us power over our enemies. He even gives us power over Satan. Satan has no authority or power over us because God gives us the power. Ephesians 6 tells us that we take on the armor of God. I mean, look around this room. See these people in this room? You might not want to mess with them because they are in covenant with God. They have God's protection. What about cutting the covenant? Well, John 1, verse 14 says the Word became flesh. At the crucifixion, think of the imagery that happened at the crucifixion. Jesus was hanging between two people. Blood was dripping down everywhere. Blood was dripping down at the feet and the ground. I mean, really what you're seeing here is symbolic of taking the animal and cutting it in half and walking between it. It's all very symbolic of a covenant relationship. Hebrew 10 shows us that Jesus was not only making the covenant, but he was also the sacrificial lamb at that covenant. What about then right after where they would raise their hands and mix blood with each other? Well, think about it. Jesus was both man and God. He was holy, but he was also human. And at the crucifixion, Jesus was here, hanging between two people, blood dripping down on the ground, over his feet on the ground. His hands were cut, or his wrists, where they put the spikes in. And in a sense, again, symbolic, mixing the blood of God and humans is kind of, it's all symbolic of a covenant and the covenant relationship. Well, as we have the shed blood of Jesus Christ applied to our hearts, his blood cleanses us from all sins. We are also made holy by that sacrifice. I mean, our lives are forever intermingled with Jesus Christ. What about the exchange of names? Jesus took on the name the Son of Man. And what are we called? We're called Christians. We are forever in the family of God by being Christians. We took on Jesus Christ's name. What about a scar? Well, Jesus had the scars of the nails in his hand and feet and the spear in his side. We have the circumcision of our heart. Turn to Romans 2, verse 29. In Romans 2, verse 29, it says, but he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that which is of the heart by the Spirit, not by the letter. And his praises is not from men, but from of God. So again, it's showing that the circumcision for us now, remember, he wrote the law in our hearts and our minds, circumcision of the heart. That's the scar. Again, elements of the covenant, of the new covenant. We'll give, what about the terms of the covenant? Well, Jesus gives the terms of the covenant in the whole Bible, right? It shows us what our responsibility is in this covenant and how we are supposed to live. The memorial meal. 1 Corinthians 11 shows us that that is what the Passover is. We take bread and wine. Again, we're memorializing the new covenant that we have God and with Jesus Christ. And then the memorial. Turn to 1 Peter 2, and we'll read verses 4 and 5. Remember, in the old covenant, they would make a memorial. They'd pile rocks on each other. They'd make a building, or they would. 1 Peter 2, verse 4. As you come into him, the living stone, rejected by men, but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into the spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Again, we can see all of this, all of these covenant elements with the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. So in conclusion, when we see the covenant and covenant elements throughout the Bible, starting with Abraham, with the Exodus from Egypt, to the judges and kings in the Old Testament. We see it with David and with Jonathan, and we see it going into the New Testament. By understanding the covenant, it really makes you look at the Bible in a whole new light. I mean, I remember reading Hebrews, and I just could not understand that book. It was just too complicated. But suddenly, if you understand the covenant, an element of the covenant, if you read it, it makes a lot more sense. Abraham spent a lifetime learning who God was and the power that he had access to by being in covenant with him. Well, it's the same journey that we need to be on, to learn who God is, and to understand through his covenant what God is telling us. I mean, God is telling us, all that I am giving to you. I mean, we're going into the holy days. And understanding what the holy days are, we're looking at the character of God. We're seeing how much he truly loves us by his plan of salvation. I mean, the more you understand about God, the more it changes your life. And the more that you understand about the covenant, the more power that you have access to in your life. We are in covenant with the God of this universe. I mean, God wrote the whole Bible to show us that he is all in this covenant. God is all in. Are we? Are we all in this covenant relationship with God?